unmuting, come in.
Would you start us off with a serenity prayer, Aline?
Yeah, of course. Thank you, Yvonne. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you, Yvonne.
Thank you. Oh, do I need to do something here?
Yeah, Ray, sorry, it's Pat.
Pat, where's Pat? Pat. Hold on. Oh, got her.
You got her?
Yeah. Pat, can you unmute yourself? Yep, there you are.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Pat.
I'm having a horrible echo and feedback. Do you have two devices on? Then you need to mute one. It'll go away. Right, there you go. Great. Thank you.
No, do you know what it is? I've just noticed that my iPad's got very few minutes left on it. I hope it keeps. Well, good evening, everybody. I'm Pat from Bonnie, Scotland. Privileged to be here and quite excited now. New beginnings. Well, how do I start my life? I start my life daily, every morning, with a new beginning. New beginning to me is as soon as I open my eyes. And instead of saying, oh God, it's Saturday, I say, good morning, God. So I'm internally grateful for the breath that he gives me on a daily basis. So that's how I start my life. That's how I start my morning. So every day is a new beginning for me. How did my journey in Al-Anon start? It started in 1979. I arrived at the doors of Al-Anon through AA. It was somebody in AA that brought me to Al-Anon. I phoned up about my husband, hoping that they would maybe help him. Didn't know anything about alcoholism, didn't understand alcoholism. Knew when my husband drank, he changed, and it brought nothing but trouble. So I phoned up this person because I'd got told that they'd stopped drinking and they'd went to a program. And I phoned up, and after speaking to me within minutes, he says to me, I really can't get him to go AAA. He's going to do that for himself. But I can tell you something, you're badly affected with his drinking and there's somewhere for you. And I couldn't believe it. I went, me, there's nothing wrong with me. It's him. If you could just sort him, I would be fine. And he says, well, just come, just go to the meeting. And it was his wife who was in AA that took me to my first Al-Anon meeting. Do you know that experience that when you've got like as if you're an out-of-body experience that happened to me in Al-Anon? Because my very first meeting, I cried. And that was an out-of-body for me because I never cried. You know, I was strong. I had to be strong. And I just knew, something happened to me at that meeting that night. I know the day now it was a heart contention, but I didn't know then. So she took me to that meeting on the Thursday night. On the Tuesday night, one of the girls that was there was a member of the local meeting on a Tuesday night, Blantyre. And she was no longer an Al-Anon. Did you know how when you're just an Al-Anon, you're dead enthusiastic, you know, get them to the meetings. We're fun, this wonderful place to go. So she says to me, I'll take you to this meeting on Tuesday. And I kind of believe that I couldn't wait till Tuesday to go to the meeting. And my life was hellish every weekend. And the reason why it was hellish every weekend was because every weekend I followed my man into the pubs. I chased him. I was obsessed with him. So I was always in looking for him, demanding him home and all crazy stuff. Demanding car keys. I don't know how I was going to drive two motors, but, you know, all the stupid things that I'd done. So weekends were really a struggle for me. So on a Tuesday I came and I was so excited. Oh, God. I was so excited to go to this Al-Anon. And I was into the meeting and they all welcomed me. They had a business meeting the week before and one of the things that they'd said was, we need to 12-step the newcomer. We need to take them to meetings. We need to let them know that Al-Anon's here. So I get the benefits of their business meeting and they're deciding to 12-step. I was the first 12-step. So, my God, I get phone numbers, I get everything. I can remember at the closing that the read, the opinions expressed here was strictly those of the person who gave them. Take the elect, leave the rest. And I can remember the terrifying fear that came over me, because there were two girls in there that I knew, and I only knew them to see them. They were local, and I knew them, and I thought they were saying it for me. I thought that's what that closing was for. So, like, Pat, listen, you just better watch yourself. You don't want MJ to know we're in here. So right away, I thought Secret Service. No? So on my way home, I thought, oh my God, I don't know if I should go to that place. But anyway, I get these phone numbers, and you know, I heard it said in AA, you know, when the alcoholic is in AA, they get lots of phone calls, you know, how are you doing? And I get lots of phone calls, to the members of that group. And they told me that there were other meetings and blah, blah. So that was my start of my journey to Al-Anon. I never, nobody says to me, do 90 days and 90 meetings, but they did say to me, do 6 meetings. And if you don't like it, we'll give you back your misery. I went, wow, well, I'm just going to stick in here. So I just kept going to Al-Anon. That's what I kept doing. I was very, very fortunate when I arrived in Al-Anon. When I arrived in Al-Anon, I had been a workaholic and I had a very successful job. I was a sales manager, so I had a nice car, I had a nice company car. I travelled for my job. I had a nice home. I always share this in Al-Anon because when I came into Al-Anon, there was a lot of poverty. And when I came into Al-Anon, I had everything out of me. I had everything in the outside world, nice home, nice car, went nice holidays. But there was something wrong with me. There was something missing. So that I had to travel in my life later on to discover, you know, that you can have everything, but you can have nothing. And I had nothing. I discovered very early on in the meetings that all I wanted to be was felt, wanted, needed, and loved. Because that was the damage that had happened to me. I was the youngest of 7. I was a change of life baby. My father had just come back from the war, after being in a prisoner war camp. Come back to the war, my mum fell pregnant. Whoa, 9 months later, this baby arrives. Now, was I resented with this family? Because they were all just getting up. I've got sisters that's just got children just younger than me. So when I was growing up, I get told a million thousand times that I was spoiled, you know. So when I was 5, something happened to me. I was assaulted by a stranger when I was 5 years old. And it changed not my life, not just my life, it changed my family's life. Because there was this wee lassie at 5 years old, started to be very scared of the dark and very scared of men, very, very scared. So from 5 to 16, I slept with my mother. And during that 5 to 16, my mother and father came to hate each other because my father wanted me to sleep myself and he wanted his wife in his bedroom. I didn't understand their feelings. I was only a wee lassie. But I was drip-fed that I was the cause of their arguments, their fights. My mother hated drink, absolutely hated drink. So my mother brought us up. Us girls, 5 girls and 2 boys, to hate drink. I to later learn in Al-Anon what how all that happened. But right up until I was 16, I slept with my mother, and then I had a couple of boyfriends, but I really didn't trust. So eventually I met my husband. He was singing in a band. He was a singer of a group. And I had just fell out with a guy that I'd went with for about a year, and I got a bet. Somebody bet me $10 note, which would be say $10, that I couldn't lumber him. That means lumber him. I don't know what it means in American, but say lumber him. And I get bet $10 that I couldn't lumber him. And he was this local's heartthrob. Now, I had to learn in Al-Anon that money was my power. So I said, oh, wow, I'll get a date with him. So that's how we started. That's how we met. I never really, really was attracted to the guy or anything, but he played in a group and he went to good places. He went and he sang, you know, the band, and I got allowed to go. So that was me and him. That's how we just went along with my life. I knew from the beginning my husband, drink changed him. I knew that because he couldn't wait to come off the stage for singing to get full of the drink, and he needed the drink to go on the stage. So I knew that drink was a problem, but I didn't know anything about alcoholism. So what happened was I get into this fellowship, and I'm broken. I'm totally broken. I'm looking for a new beginning. I'm looking for a new beginning. I didn't know whether to get divorced. I didn't know whether to... I just didn't know what to do. But I came in here and I had a wee girl. My wee girl was 8 when I came into Al-Anon. When I came into Al-Anon. And what they says to me in Al-Anon was, what I heard them saying to me in Al-Anon was, see if you put as much energy in to looking after your child as what you did with your obsession with your husband. It'll help you to get better. Because if you keep doing the same things over and over again, you'll get the same results. The second step, sanity. First step, insanity. So that's what I started doing. I started dating this wee girl and I started to love her. Because Al-Anon was learning me about love very early on in my early journey. So I started to take my eyes off my husband, let him drink, and we started taking my daughter. So the weekends were very important to me. So I finished working a Friday, and on a Saturday we took the car and we went away to the seaside. Hail, rain, or snow, we went out, we went away. That helped me to detach from my husband. That helped me. And do you know that drive home? I always remember that drive home, being frightened, wondering if he's in there, if he's no one, because the obsession was very, very hampering me to let go. I had years of practicing it. So I had to learn to let it go in Al-Anon. So that was a start of a new beginning. I started to show this wee lassie. I had an annoying about love because I'd had mixed up dysfunctional upbringing. But Al-Anon taught me about love. So I started to put this love in this wee lassie and take time for her. So that's how my journey went. As I went on in Al-Anon, my husband gets sober 2 years later. He's due to celebrate his 39th year sober. Very, very grateful for that. But do you know what happened to me was when he got sober, that was another new beginning. Because all of a sudden, I had let go of him. And all of a sudden, he's joined me. So, do you know, I've heard it said in Al-Anon before, we start picking our sponsors, we start picking, you know, talk to him, don't let them in your car, da-da-da-da. So I started taking eyes off me. So then I started to slap. I would say, slap my Al-Anon. So again, through the sponsorship, she says to me, you need to let go of him in sobriety. So I had to start another program, another new beginning. So that's how my journey went. And then about 7 years in Al-Anon, I get diagnosed with emphysema. I think I've had it for years and years and years previous, but because I was so nervous and hyper and all that, you'd have just thought I was anxious because I was neurotic. I was totally neurotic. And I was 6.5 stone with nerves and everything. But anyway, I took this illness and I couldn't believe it. Again, I had to change to that. That adjustment took me about 5 or 6 years to let go. But this time I was trying to find a real connection with my higher power and acceptance. Do you know? So I started to become aware. I started to come acceptance. And then I started to change my attitude. And then I started action. So when I started doing them, after going to college to try and do another career, after doing the things that I'd done because I wouldn't accept it, I wouldn't work, I had to let go. So then I jumped to the rest of the steps and I'm done my fourth step. I was desperate to do my fourth step. I don't know how I'm just scared for it. I wanted to undo the shit that I had in me. I wanted to clear out everything about me. And I wasn't frightened to share it with anybody. I wasn't frightened to share it because it was a new beginning and a new discovery. I loved finding out about myself in Al-Anon. So after that, I started to find out, you know, the fourth and the fifth step in the list, who to make amends to. Again, that was a new beginning. That was a new beginning. Going to my family, making amends to my brothers and my sisters. I lost 3 of my family. They were 61 years of age. God's given me so many opportunities, so many opportunities. My dad took cancer. I was able to love the man I hated. I hated him when I came into Al-Anon. I was able to love him. I was able to be down there, massage his feet. I became a therapist then. I made him massage his feet when he was dying of cancer and they couldn't get a shoe on and he was so ill. My mum took dementia then. I believe that my mother took dementia because the first time in my life I managed to control my dad's cancer. And my poor mum took dementia at 79 years of age. The dementia, you see the dementia in her? She lived till she was 85. I was at hospital all the time. I was never away. I kept her for a year. And I remember the doctor saying to my husband, if she doesn't put her man in a home, you're going to lose your wife before you lose your mother-in-law. That was hard to let go. This wee woman that had me at 44, who I resented, who I thought was a wee old woman with a pyramid and a wee pyramid and used to come to get me at school, thought she was too old, she looked like my granny. Everybody thought she was my granny. You know, the resentments I had that I never knew about. Never knew of resentments. Didn't know anything about alcoholism. Didn't know it was a disease of the mind and a disease of the heart. Never knew that. I had closed my heart. I always sat with my arms folded, my feet folded. I learnt to open my heart. I learnt to open it wide because I learnt to trust. I don't depend in part, I depend on God. I've got a great relationship with my higher power. Then we'll move on. 10 years ago, I fell and I broke my back. Oh, God. What more can you give now? What more can you give now? I'm getting old now. I'm 61. What are you giving me this for? What a curving lesson in my life. What a big lesson. Because, you know, the end I had, that I still was hanging on, it had to go. Had to go. Because I had to depend on other people. I had to be washed. I had to be braced in the morning. I had to be braced at night. I couldn't get out of my bed. I started off, you know, in my brace in a wheelchair. Then I moved on to a Zimmer. Then I moved on to two sticks. And then I moved on to one stick. And this beautiful old who's now married and has got a beautiful granddaughter. And I've watched this wee granddaughter. And now she's ready to go to school and I can't watch her. Because I've got a broken back. I can't watch her. I can't take her in and out of the car. I can't do anything. My heart's broken. I had a struggle with God. Struggle. Do you know, but God was only learning me. He was only teaching me. He was teaching me, do you know, I say every day's a school day. He was teaching me about getting right into my soul, about healing my heart, completely healing my heart, learning how to let go. My husband had to wash me. To strip me and wash me. Couldn't get washed. Do you know, Pat that's always get the hair done, always smart, the rest likes the wee neckties, likes the gear, likes the liquor. It was all the way. They took out and buy me jogging gear. Never wore joggies in my life. So they didn't do that. I remember I was walking up the precinct in Hamilton. I stay in Hamilton, born and bred in Hamilton. I'm walking up the street in Hamilton. And I looked in, I caught myself in a reflection in a window. And I says to my daughter, oh my God, I look like an old pensioner. And she says to me, you're an old pensioner, Pat. And that was an exact words. You're an old pensioner, Pat, you're 61. And I says, oh, mother of God, but look at me. And she says to me, see for the day, throw that stick away, ma'am. The seat's all the way up. You see when you're getting up and you need a rest, just sit down. You're getting your fight in your soul. You've been to the ashes. And you rise like the phoenix. And that says, that day when I've never used that stick. 10 years later, I decided to describe myself as a lotus. Do you know, I was a lotus. I looked good in the talk. But I've had to come for the mud. I've had to get rid of that 5-year-old pain. I've had to grow. I've had to get rid of feeling not wanted in my husband, who loved me when I didn't love him. Do you know? He ran after me. I never run after him. But alcoholism tore us apart. It strips families. It's, do you know, it's like you're on the cross and say, how fast can we put the nails in? It crucifies us. Do you know? And I'm a fighter. I've always been a fighter. And if I just apply these steps as much as I applied the obsession and the hatred and the fears and the negative and the playing God, I'm only a winner if I apply the love, the understanding, the compassion, the forgiveness. Forgiveness set me free. Set me free. So this is me the day. This is me the day. As I say, when I start it, every day is a new beginning. Because see, when you've got a lung problem and you can't breathe, I don't know when your next breath will be. So I just continually take one wee step in front of the other. I've got the most beautiful as granddaughter and I've got a fabulous relationship with my 50-year-old daughter, you know, who I love dearly. Love her. But she told me when I was getting an Al-Anon and I was, you know, Mrs. Al-Anon, you know, she says to me, my business becomes your business when I tell you so, Pat. I drip fed her Al-Anon, you know, she's nearly Al-Anon, she's got it. And then she'll say to me, do you know, if I want your opinion, I'll ask you for it. So I'm glad that God's gave her the backbone that I've had. because nobody knows the fight in life. Everything looks as though everything's rosy. You go nice holidays, you've got a nice car, you've got a great job. Believe you me, you can have everything and nothing. And I think God, bit by bit, took all the material stuff away from me. He never left me with wanting anything. But he took all the trimmings away from me to let me find me. Al-Anon's my foundation. I'm in the first step every day when I open my eyes. I start my daily with my gratitude list and my meditation. I do a wee spiritual text in the morning. And I finish my night with a 10 step. I look over my night. When I'm going to
you've got 1 minute left, honey.
Okay, honey, thank you. And I finish off with the prayer and the meditation. I love meditation. The 12 steps are the spiritual program that it promised me. And I hope on a daily basis I love them. I love Al-Anon. I need to thank Aileen for asking me. I'd done a convention a couple of weeks ago and they asked me to talk in the 12 steps in 15, 20 minutes. It nearly broke me, you know, because I should have just said no. And I should have said what my pal said, just go read the 12 steps and seem finished. But anyway, do you know something? I talk for the heart, I love for the heart, I've learnt to open the heart, and I don't look at notes, I've never used notes in my life, I'm dyslexic, they've been bloody good to me. I'm Pat, and I'm happy to be here.
Pat, love you all. I love you. You just crack me up. The cross, and don't know how fast to get the nails on. I thought I was going to pee myself here. Oh, okay. Let me open up the chat. I'm sitting here laughing, but... all right, chat is open. You guys want to put things in the chat? Stick your hands up if you want to chat for a second. We can do that, too. You know, it's so funny. Somebody texted me and said, okay, the next trip has got to be Scotland. I love these accents, but I have to develop my ear just a little bit better. And I just thought that was the funniest thing. So Eileen, why are you so quiet? You've been watching the clock like a chicken hawk.
Yeah. Thank you, Yvonne. Thank you, Pat, for sharing from the heart. Thank you so much. And our last speaker is Myra from Portsmouth, which is in UK. So Myra, if you would like to come in and share on new beginnings, if you just would like to unmute, please.
Oh, she can't. Hold on, I'll unmute her. There you go, Pat. You Myra. Yeah, there we have you. There. Hi, Myra.
Take a big breath. Thank you very much. This is an absolute joy to be here today, to listen to everybody. Although it says Portsmouth, UK, I do come from Scotland originally, Glasgow girl, born and bred. So I'm very, very grateful to be here. And new beginnings for me are, every time I get a light bulb moment, it's a new beginning because something shifts and something changes. Excuse me, I need to give this dog a treat because it's funny. So for me, when I come into Al-Anon, there we go. When I come into Al-Anon, my first meeting was a new beginning. It was a light bulb moment. And before I get there, I'll tell you a wee bit about where I came from. I was brought up in the house with my young brother, with my mum and dad. My dad did have a drink problem, but I didn't know that until I was 3 years in Al-Anon. But my mother affected me very, very badly, and she didn't drink. She was quite cruel. She was very good at raising her hand and slapping me, and I was absolutely terrified for the woman. So I became that good girl who was frightened to do anything in case I brought up my mother's wrath. And I met my partner when I was just coming up for 18. He was just coming up for 17. We were still at school. And we went with one another for about 4 years. And like every young teenager at that age, we all drank. I never seen it as a problem. When my mother worked in the pubs and my dad was there, there was parties in our house on a Saturday night, and it was all good fun. But when I got married to my partner, I thought we were going to have this lovely roses round the door because I was looking for our relationship to be different from the home that I was brought up in. I thought we were going to be all lovey-dovey, and that never worked out, because the first weekend we were married, he stayed out all weekend, and I had no idea what happened, because he'd never done that before. And immediately into my life came threatened violence. I can say that today. Before Al-Anon, I said it was violence, but I know today it was threatened violence. He would growl and I would cower, and that's the way it went for the first 6 years of our marriage. And in those 6 years, I had two wee boys, and my attitude in my life at that point was going to be, I'm going to bring these boys up different from how my mother treated me. I'm going to love them. I'll never hit them. And that was how I seen it. And my partner at that point, that was some of the worst drinking days of his life. And I can realise today what came about in that first 6 years, because I had two mental breakdowns before I got into Al-Anon, and I came in on my knees. But I came in thinking Al-Anon would tell me how to get him sober. I'm still waiting on that bit of paper that says, there you go, get him sober. And that never happened. But in my first meeting, I heard a lady sharing about how she affected her children. And that was my first light bulb moment, because I thought, I've done that. My wee boy's 3-year-old. I've got him up at the window and I'm shouting, there's that bee away with your money. We hate him, don't we? And he would pat me on the shoulder and be saying, don't cry, mummy. And I thought that was okay. Before Al-Anon, I thought that meant that my son loved me and I was being a good mother. And that first meeting completely crashed that illusion, because I realised at that first meeting I was not a good mother and I was damaging my children. And that was a new beginning for me with my two boys. I stopped all the bawling and shouting. I won't say immediately, because this programme teaches me. I had a wee lady who I used to phone up on a Saturday night when I would be waiting my husband coming in with a drink in him, and I didn't know what kind of state he was going to be in. So I would be all irritable and unreasonable, and I'd be shouting at these two wee boys. And this lady would say to me, I remember the night, she said to me, are we going to have a picnic in the carpet? Get 3 glasses, put some juice in it, and have a picnic with your boys. And that's what I did, because I did everything everybody suggested. And we had a nice night, and they went to bed happy. And I went to my bed happy, and things started changing. And when I came into Al-Anon, listened to people talking, I found out who Myra was through the older ladies in the meeting. They were sharing about how hurt they were at the way the children had treated them. And I could hear my mother talking, because I hated my mother. By the time I got into Al-Anon, I have said openly, if she dies tomorrow, I will dance in her grave. That's how much I disliked that. My dad was a drinker. So for me, listening to these women talking about the pain they were in with their daughters was another light bulb moment, and that was another new beginning where I thought, I need to try and work this relationship with my mum, which was very difficult because she was a control freak. She was a very domineering woman, and when I was in her company, I turned into a wee girl of 10. If I was 40, I was still 10, because she still had this way of talking to me that made me feel worth and nothing. So I knew I had that to change. But I can also remember coming into Al-Anon, and my mother left my father when I was 16, and I heard somebody else sharing about the mother side, the father side, team mother, team dad. I decided to go team dad, and I didn't know at that point that my dad had a drink problem, because, and the reason for it was, I did hate my mother, yes, but as a child of 16, I knew I'd get away with murder if I stayed with my dad, because he wouldn't be there to put down rules and regulations the way my mother did. So my brother and I stayed with my dad, and my mother went away with my dad's best pal. And many years before Al-Anon, I used to say, that's the man my mother ran away with. I never called him my stepdad, because I wouldn't even give him that name. And when I had my wee boys, and my mother says, this will be your granda Alec. And I says, no, it will not. My children have got a granda, and he ain't it. So that bad-tempered wee lassie was still there. But another light bulb moment for me was when my stepfather died, his daughter came to the funeral, and she had chosen through this divorce not to see her dad, because she didn't want to hurt her mother. And when we were at this funeral, I could hear this wailing I've never heard Andy so distraught in my life. And I says to my mother, what is the matter with her? And my mother says, that's regret. That's what that is. That is regret, because she never saw Dad for all those 16 years or whatever it is. And when I hear that, was a light bulb moment for me, because I do not want to be like that when my parents die. And that's when another new beginning for me happened, when I started really working this relationship with my parents. My dad lived on his own at that time. He drank every day. And he was getting old, so two or three whiskies, and he was drunk. And he would go home to his wee flat, and he'd lie in his bed, and he'd watch his telly, and he'd get up the next morning, he'd do the same thing, and that was his life. But when I was in his company, I bled for him. I've always loved my dad. And I was ill at the thought of this man being drunk, because one of the times he set the house on fire, and somebody had to come. I didn't live with him at that time, and God love him. When the house was set on fire and the fire brigade came and put the fire out, which was in the upstairs building, he just decided to live downstairs. He never done anything with the room, but that was him as alcoholic. And my mother was the exact opposite. She was Mrs. Clean. Everything had to be perfect. My two boys hated going to visit her because they had two grannies. They had my husband's gran and they had my mum. And if I said, you're going to your gran's to stay at the weekend, they would ask, what gran? And if I said, your granny Mary, which was my husband's mother, they're, yay, that's great. See, if I said, you're going to your granny Anne, it was like, oh, God. Because she would make them hold napkins and they had to wash their hands all the time and they couldn't jump about. And that was the type of childhood I'd had, where my mother-in-law was the exact opposite. She let them sit on the couch, jump in the beds, the things that people did. But moving on for that, once I got into Al-Anon and I was doing all these things, it took me a while to realise that my husband was alcoholic, to see that there was a disease in him, because I was only 29 when I came into Al-Anon, and he at that point was a fit 6'4" young man. And didn't he look alcoholic? I could see the alcoholism in my dad, because he was a very thin, frail alcoholic. I could not see that in my husband. And I was in Al-Anon a good maybe 8-9 years before I seen the mental sickness in him. It appeared most weekends. He did all the money in, so we had a lot of poverty. Pat spoke about, sometimes I didn't even have the bus fare to get to my meeting and I would need to walk there. But I went to my meetings religiously, because I knew when I got in there, somebody else talked about that feeling of being wanted and loved. These women in Al-Anon loved me. Sometimes if I made a phone call, they would let me stay overnight if I was feeling frightened. They came to my rescue many, many times emotionally and just loved me. And I looked to them as mothers. And my sponsor... my sponsor was a kick-ass sponsor. She took no nonsense off me, because she knew I could quite easily wallow in self-pity. And I would decide, this is what I'm going to do. And I would go to my sponsor and think, I think this is the way I should handle this. And she would say to me, oh, right. And I thought, oh, that doesn't sound a very good all right. And she went, what do you think? And I'd say to her, what do you think I should do? And she said, what do you think? And this one, she always put it back to me, never ever answered me. Never let me say, this is what you should do. She always made me think, which allowed me to grow up and become mature, because I didn't realise to come into Al-Anon that I was a very immature wee girl. I thought because I was married and called Mrs. with two kids that I was a mature person. I'm still a wee girl of 15 in my head and in my heart. And although James drank at the weekends, and that was all he did at the beginning, during the week we had a really good relationship. So this weekend carry-on made me hate him. And I don't share this often, but I will. When James was 18 and my brother was 15, and I do believe today if my brother had went on to live, he would have been an alcoholic. But the two of them get very, very drunk this night, and they stole a car and get crashed into a lamppost, and my brother was killed in this accident. And I know today it was an accident. And James, who later on became my husband, was the person who had to live with us for the rest of his life. And he and my brother were actually really good friends. But because my mum and dad were divorced at this time, my mother seen him as the man who murdered her son, and that's how she spoke about him. So when I told her 3 years after the car accident that I was marrying this man, I can see today, and I did make amends for it, how hurt she was. But see, at that point in my life, I didn't give a damn whether she was hurt or whether she wasn't. We were getting married, story ended. And we had that horrible 6 years. And then we did another 10, 15 years when the drinking began to get worse. And they went on to another substance. Thank God I was in Al-Anon, because Al-Anon allowed me to let go. And what gave me that new beginning of completely letting go was he had two heart attacks. And after his second heart attack, which anybody that was normal and sane would stop drinking and taking other drugs, but no. And I remember he sat in my house one day, and he's got this wee table next to him. And on this table, there's a big glass of red wine, a bottle of Budweiser, and a joint. And he says to me, "Look at that, Hen, everything a man could ask for." And I thought, see, if I wasn't in this program, I'd have bounced that table up in the air. But I just looked at him and I went, "So it is, darling," and continued to watch the telly. And then looked at my watch and thought, I'm away to bed to watch my programs, and removed myself. And we lived like that a lot. But during the week, we did have great communication. And for me, I'm so grateful for that, because I know some people had horrendous alcoholic partners and horrendous alcoholic experiences. I know today, at the end of my man's drinking, he just took another substance and drank and watched the telly, black and white movies. That was his life. He'd nothing else in it. He didn't have time for his boys. He didn't have time for me. He was a sad, sad man. And because of Al-Anon, I had a life. I had a really, really good life. I went to a lot of Al-Anon meetings. I went to a lot of Al-Anon conventions. I had a lot of good friends. My life was wonderful, except I would look at this man sitting in the corner and think, God help him. Al-Anon gave me that compassion, and thank God for that. And being able to live with him. I think I lived with my husband drinking for about 30 years and getting worse and worse and worse, God help him. And his life was going down the tubes, and he was starting to lose friends because he became a ponce. And in case that people in America don't know what that means, it meant he was beginning to take drink off other people, take fags off other people, cigarettes, sorry, off other people. He just used other people to get what he needed. And it was sad to watch it, but my oldest boy became very affected by his dad at this point, because what I didn't say was, in the early days in Al-Anon, I had bad mouthed them. Al-Anon taught me not to do that. So I stopped bad mouthing my husband to my boys and allowed them to see for themselves what they thought about their dad. But I must also say, in their young days, my two sons were absolutely terrified for me, because at one point I turned into my mother, the bawling and shouting and screaming. And my oldest boy, when he was going through his puberty years, was very, very angry with me. He wouldn't sit in the same room with me. If we got on a bus and I sat beside him, he would get up and move. When we walked down the hall in the house, he would shrug himself away from me. And I took all this because I wanted to be loved by my children, and I took this all on board. And I remember I went away to a convention, and when I came back, my husband says to me, "James and I had a good talk about you." And I thought, oh, that must have been a barrel of laughs, thinking they'd be tearing me to bits. And I'm going to read this out to you, because my son wrote this when he was 16, and I've treasured it since. I keep saying I'm going to put it up in the wall in a frame, and he'll no let me. And it says, "Mum, in a mind of mixed emotions, full of troubles from the past, there came a clash of personalities, but now that time has passed. So remember these words I never said, because I'll say them again another day. The bottom line is, you're my mum, and no matter what I say, don't take it bad or feel upset, I love you anyway. So if you're feeling worried or down, unwell or blue, remember this to cheer you up. Mum, I love you." And I couldn't even cry. I was so shocked that he would write anything nice about me. I couldn't believe it. And we had a standing joke just up until recently that if ever I phoned my sons, I would say to my young one, "Bye, love you," and he'd say, "Love you." And when I spoke to this one, I'd say, "Bye, love you," and he'd go, "Bye." There was never a "love you." And I would come off the phone, and my husband and I would laugh about that, because I stopped to take it personally. So his drinking got worse and worse, and 8 years ago, he'd done something really, really silly. He got himself where he hurt somebody badly, and he had to remove himself from Glasgow for fear of his life and us as a family were being threatened by these people. It was a gangster's son that he'd punched right in the face and broke his jaw, and he'd to remove himself, and we were under a lot of fear. And I became a bit anorexic at that time. I decided my marriage was over because this was it. Enough was enough. I was put not be any of this nonsense any longer. It'd gone a step too far. My oldest son was in bits. He came up crying and told me, as far as he was concerned, his dad was dead to him, didn't want to speak to him. And we got him down to, he came down to Portsmouth to live with his brother. And I know today that that was a whole God incident, because I had no intentions of leaving Glasgow or anything like it. And I know my husband didn't either. But on that night, another new beginning happened, because, and this is a higher power, we were trying to get him in a coach to go down to England, and it was costing £25. And I was in such a state, I couldn't get my card to work, I couldn't type in the numbers, and my son done it. And when my son done it, he says to me, "Mum, I've got that ticket booked and it costs 50 pence. And I'm thinking, it can't be 50 pence, it's £25, I'm demented. But this certain bus does, it's, it starts off cheap and then it builds up. So we got him down to London for 50 pence. And when he came down here and went to live with his brother, he got himself in AAA, which I was not expecting, because I thought my husband would die drunk. He got himself in AA and he phoned me up to tell me that he was sober, and that he had a sponsor and that I knew who he was. And I thought, what a load of boo. How do I know who your sponsor is? But again, it's a God incident. His sponsor was the man. I was in an Al-Anon meeting on a Thursday night, and his sponsor ran the Thursday night AA meeting before he moved down south. So I did know his sponsor, and knew his sponsor very well. And also the flat that he'd got, because we went on holiday to visit his brother, I knew the area. And I thought, God, he's in a lovely wee place, and he's in this nice flat, and it's sunshine, and the beach is there, and I'm stuck up in Glasgow. And the resentment was choking me. I was so angry that he'd left us with all this fallout for his carry-on, and he was doing, as I thought, living the life of Riley, sober, having a wonderful time. And we never really spoke much for a year because I was so hurt and so angry. But we had a holiday coming up. We'd booked a holiday, and I'm so frugal. I was not giving up this holiday just because he'd moved to sail to England. So I decided he'd need to come up to Glasgow, and we would get on the plane, we'd go over holiday, and we'd decide after that what we were doing. And it was one of the best holidays I've had in my life, because he was sober and he stayed sober, because I was watching him like a hawk. Any signs of him drinking, and when we came back, I was right there. That had made up my mind. But when we came home in the September, I came down to visit his wee flat in the October, and me being me, I'm looking at his flat and I'm thinking, that wall would be lovely with this kind of wallpaper. And so I'm decorating his flat, and I still live up in Glasgow, and he's in Portsmouth. And it was quite funny, because I told my sponsor, and she says to me, "Did James ask you to pick his wallpaper?" And I says, "No, but you know how you need the woman's touch." And unbeknownst to me, he'd phoned up his sponsor and says to him, "She's brightening the life out of me. She's talking about moving into this flat." So we did. We did. He asked me in the December, would I come down to Portsmouth? Sorry, why don't you at least give it a try? And I thought, right, I'll try it, because if it doesn't work, she says, you've still got your home, you can still come back up the road. And that's what I did. I came down in my head thinking, if he kicks off, he starts drinking, I'm back up the road. That was in the December. My son phoned me up in the January to tell me, "Mum, I'm giving up the house because I'm moving in with my girlfriend." And I thought, oh shit, that means I've nowhere to go back to. So if he takes a drink, I'm stuck here. But the new beginning with him being sober and me moving down here was 8 wonderful years of sobriety. He took to AA like a duck to water this time. He had great sobriety, which helped me, because he would pick me up and things. And at first I get quite annoyed about that, because I'm thinking 30 years in Al-Anon and he's 2 years sober. Who does he think he is? You know, but he was working a great program. And I would, because it's a kind of holiday resort I live in, when the sun was shining, I would think, could go a nice walk to the beach. This is defects of character. And I'd say, Mum would go a walk to the beach and he would say, nah, I don't feel like it. And I'd think, you don't feel, what do you mean you don't feel like it? And I would storm at the house, banging doors, and he'd say, you in a bad mood? Me? No, no, me. I'll wait. And I would call somebody from Glasgow and I would say to them, what do you think of him? And he'll no go a walk. And she would say to me, what do you see? And I thought, well, there's a bit of grass, there's a wee lake there, and then there's a beach, then there's the ocean. And she's saying, and you're in a bad mood because your man wouldn't go a walk. Get a grip. And I would think about it, and I'd go back and apologise. And that 8 years, as I say, was absolutely wonderful. And then last year, we got a bit of a shock because he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And I know my husband's been the love of my life, and last year was the hardest year I've ever had in my life, having to nurse this man, watch him going for a big 6'4", well-built man to a stick insect. There was nothing on him. But, you know, his recovery and his programme in that year helped me immensely, because the nurses kept saying to him, this is what we'll be doing. And he would say, don't tell me, tell her. I don't want to know. And when the doctor would say, would you like to know how much time you've got? He's like, don't want to know, tell her. So I did know how long he had, but he didn't. He didn't want to know. And he said, the reason for that is, if you give me a time, be it 6 months, I'm going to go on a countdown. I'll start 6 months, 5 months, 4 months. He went, and I don't want to live my life like that. I get up in the morning and I live for the day. And if I'm well for the day, that's great. And if I'm ill, I'll take my tablets and I'll go to my bed. And that helped me through that year. And my two sons were amazing. They both came down. They have both made their amends to their dad. More than I could ever ask for. And they've been absolutely wonderful for me. But I remember the night she was dying, and I says to her, I need to say to you again, Mum, I'm really, really sorry for all the crap that I put you through when you left my dad. And she says, look, Ken, we all make mistakes. Don't bother about it. And on that night, I remember, she says, where's James? Now, going for the woman that was calling him a murderer, she says, where is James? And he had helped me. Even although he drank at that time, he was great with my mother. He lifted her, he washed her, he did a lot of things with her. And I says, he's in the living room. She says, tell him to come in. And he came into the bedroom. And because he was a big man, she could lie in his chest, kind of back the way. And he says, how's it going, Annie? What's the matter with you? And she says, I just want to tell you something, son. I want to tell you that I love you. Well, talk about crying. That, I know how much that meant to my husband, because he'd lived his whole life knowing this woman hated him, as she thought, for killing her son. And that was a great relief for her to do that for him that night. I could see the difference. And when he was ill, he also said things to me, because I never realised, although I'd been in Al-Anon a long time, I still can attend. What he says to me was, you don't know your own worth. And I'd say, I don't know what you mean by that. Because people would, somebody says it earlier, say you work a good programme and you do this. And I would say, it's not me that works a programme, it's Al-Anon. And he'd say, what do you mean it's Al-Anon? You've got to work it today there. Stop putting yourself down. And he has helped me immensely in my recovery when he was recovered. And even when he drank, he never ever put me down. He would tell me I look nice. It'd be me that's saying, you sure I look all right? This is okay for me to go. This poor wee soul. So I know today that we were meant to be together. And somebody was talking about when he died in December. And I know my grieving process is no even beginning, because he died on the 5th of December and he was cremated on the 23rd. And I'm saying to this wee counsellor, I say, well, I've had my first Christmas, I've had my first New Year, and I've had his first birthday, was 4th of January. And she started laughing and she says to me, you've no had any firsts. She went, your brain hadn't even acknowledged that he's no here at that time. Next year might be your first. You're sailing through this. You have not been hit with a tsunami. You're getting gentle waves. And I know that there is gentle waves and there is wee moments where I have that bit. And I kind of believe in robins and things. I know some people do, some people don't. But for the first week my husband died, there's been a robin sitting outside my window every single day that floats about the garden. And my poor wee neighbour lost her man in the March. And there's now two robins, we call them James and Graham, float about this garden, and that cheers me up. That's something that makes me smile. And the fact that the people in my wee group, I finally opened a group down in Portsmouth. I came down to a very sick group and had to keep my mouth shut because it was the only meeting here. And I knew if I said anything, I could get put out. So I just kept my mouth shut and let it run. And
when I Myra, down, honey, that's time.
Right. Thank you very much. I have finally opened a wee group here, and thank God it's doing well and the people in the group are great. But I'm just very grateful to be here, and thanks, everybody.
Myra, thank you, Eileen. Love you, Scottish girls. You crack me up. You do. Very good. The chat is open, you guys. If you want to say thank you to any of our speakers, you can stick your electronic hand up in the air.